This is Dr. Rock back once again, and this time hopefully I've got Dom on the line with me. Are you there, Dom?
Yo.
Very good. So what have you been doing recently, Dom? Have you been questioning enforcers or seeking out infiltrators?
Well, a bit of both, really. Been mixed up with people. Got stuck in a bubble at some point from people that I didn't know before this year, and I've had a very crazy year since exposing Occupy. It's just been quite intense, to say the least. The most recent thing that I've done was the other week, went to Off Grid Festival, and lo and behold, there was somebody from my past there, David Shaler, who's an ex-MI5 whistleblower, now claims to be the Messiah whilst dressing as a woman and telling people that common law works and all this Messiah stuff is like quite crazy. So I got to interview him at Off Grid about MI5 whistleblowing undercover agents, mind control, and would he know if he's mind controlled or not?
Wow, and, sounds like a good interview.
It was. Well, I knew that David would like shift away from like questions and try and drag the conversation away. So I found it interesting. I've only watched a few minutes of it back myself, but I'm going to upload it tonight. And what I did find interesting in it is, at the end of the day, if he is still working for the government under some kind of mind control, or even if he's not, even if he blatantly knows it, I don't think he does know it. If he is working for the government, he doesn't know it himself. He's doing stuff quite genuinely from his own heart. And I believe there's a lot of people out there in these circles, whether they want to call themselves part of a truth movement or part of this or part of a group, that there's a lot of sick people out there that may be trying to do things that they think are helping, but that there's some sick people in society that want to be free from that society, and they carry that sickness with them.
Yeah, so they don't actually manage to make it out. They just kind of make it deeper in some way.
Well, that was even like the Occupy movement. What they were saying was they were against the banking system, and that couldn't be further from the truth. When you look at it, it was like they were creating a new system of control, one with more rules and enforcing, like, and taking more rights off people whilst they were doing it as well. Like the mass people, I walk around London asking people if they've heard of the Occupy movement, who are supposed to be speaking for the 99% of people. People hadn't heard of them, let alone know what they're about if they did hear of them. So it's crazy when people want to be free from the system of control. They seem to want to replicate that system or replicate another system, and the only way they can perceive to be free is by being in a position of control themselves, and that turns people into control freaks.
It is funny that, isn't it? Because, I mean, we've talked before about the fact that many of the groups that we've had contact with over the last couple of years or so have either been, substantively, if not substantially, infiltrated, or were actually set up by the world management team in the first place. And it's possibly people's, I don't know. I mean, I don't know whether it's their conditioning. I noticed one of the first things I noticed about Occupy was that they were actually having regular meetings and things like that, which really struck me a little bit of the industrial world.
Well, even when we caught up with them the other week down at Green Gathering Festival, and
I was there. Oh, that was good. Yeah, go on.
Well, I did finally get to go over that video, and it just seemed to me that the people that were running the Occupy movement, and the name of their talk on Sunday afternoon was What Are Festivals About, or something like that.
Yeah, What Are Festivals For, it was, wasn't it?
What Are Festivals For? And the people that were sitting in there were mainly people from Truth Juice, and then other people that are connected to all these sort of like circles of exposure or trying to find remedy and solution, and the people that were running Occupy. The people that were running Occupy, it just looked like it was an intelligence gathering meeting, and other people were free to sit there and they manipulate them. And much like it yourself, you ended up walking out of the meeting, because to interact in their meetings, you need to follow the process of hands up, shaky hands, vote down, and it's like what we exposed within the Occupy movement, that could be very easily manipulated when you've got five people that know what the agenda is, and they know what they can and can't talk about. So it's not a free debate when you've got people manipulating.
Oh, it's thoroughly weird. I mean, I'd probably give it another go if I encounter them again, but I've never before had somebody come and sit down to me and give you a load of hand signals that show approval, disapproval, whether you want to make a direct point or an indirect point. And the thing is that it interrupts the flow of energy between people and stops it being kind of natural and creative. Well, that was my experience of it.
That's it. It's like if they were trying to just have a like community network, then like they would have people who self-appoint themselves in them positions to try and control the situation and the agenda. When you looked at how they set everything up, you had the general assemblies, which had self-appointed people in, like Saskia Kent, who was exposed as a Common Purpose graduate. You had the Tavistock Institute doing workshops down there. So the Tavistock Institute are well known to be the world's top social engineers and manipulate agendas. And they are, if people want to talk about conspiracy theories like Illuminati and New World Order, just have a look at the facts, like the Tavistock Institute. There's something that you can prove is actually going on, and they are manipulating the mass population worldwide. So you had them guys doing social dreaming events and blogging about it, and it was like, to me, it just seemed like one big social engineering experiment set up by the government to predict what it would be like in the event of a monetary system collapse, because then it will turn into like an apocalypse style condition where that people will be like all arguing with each other. It wasn't very pleasant at Occupy, where you got people sniping at each other all day long, fights going on, and that sort of thing would happen, and that's a very small scale, but like if the monetary system collapsed, it would be like a zombie apocalypse where people would be ripping things apart, going out and pulling things down, and that the world's top social engineers need to know what it's going to look like in the event of a collapse. And I think that's what it was all about.
They've got it down now to being able to look at quite small samples, haven't they, to get some idea of what behaviour will be.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, something else made me laugh the other week. I found a link online where they're doing university courses where you can get a degree in activism.
Oh, it'd be interesting to see the syllabus for that one.
Well, it's like, what's that all about? You know what I mean? The government now like want to know what do they want to know, or are they teaching people what that you must do to be an activist, or what does it mean to be an activist?
I wonder if they're
the syllabus would be most interesting.
I wonder if they're including no contract, return to sender.
So I'll tell you what, that's quite shocking actually. Would they have that style of activism in there? Because when you look at it, when people are standing up individually against the system and saying, right, I don't want to be party to that system anymore, that is activism in its highest degree. But when you're following a group or an order or a team, and you're being part of that group, then you're not actually going to make much more to accept what the group's agenda is. And if they don't achieve it, then like nothing's going to happen.
No.
And then on top of that, if that group do anything untoward, you're labelled to be part of that group, and it's hard to get rid of stigma when you're tied to be part of something.
I was going to say that's the other half of it, isn't it? One half is to try and get us into trying to get us into groups that can then be studied, and the other half of the agenda, if you like, is try to get those of us who are acting as a bunch of individuals to look like we are connected with a group.
Well, that's a funny thing with myself, like. People have always like tied me to be a free man, and I don't think I've ever once claimed to be a free man on the land. I've looked into the process, I've tried using some of their information, and epically failed, like most people do when they use this information. When I see it, you're looking at the free man information, then you look at the court procedures information, and a free man's affidavit is nothing compared to a court procedures affidavit. So as I was trying to explain to a friend the other day, if you're going into court, and let's say the court is like a game of Monopoly, so they're all playing Monopoly on their Monopoly board, and they're inviting you in to come and play, and then like you found out these other rules called freemanisms, but we'll call them tennis for now, and then you go in there and try and play tennis on their Monopoly board, they're going to be really upset with you and still serve their order upon you, and you're going to have things taken from you before you know it. You think, like, by using these affidavits and notices that they could help, because it all sounds right, it sounds honourable, and as you know yourself, Nick, when you're being honourable against a corrupt system, it's still not going to stop them. They're still going to come at you, and by not following their rules, you're not going to find much remedy by attacking that system with a new set of rules.
No, I rather like, I've heard Vin talk about, you know, you kind of going in there for a game and they shake out, you know, a load of black and white pieces and stuff like that, and they just put on the board a load of, a mixture of chess and draft pieces and black bits on white squares and all of that, and then they say, right, you'll move.
Yeah.
So even if you think you understand what's going on, it seems to me that there are a lot of levels. In fact, what it seems to me is that if you're going to approach that particular game, that there are layers upon layers of complexity and forms and stuff which end up with you just feeling like you've touched the tar baby, and that the most successful ones appear to be the ones that get you out right at the beginning, so that you don't have to go in the first place, or so that if you do go in, you get out really sharpish and without being flash.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, with myself, like what I do, by looking at the game as it is, because it is a game and it has a body of rules, I would say to people, if you want to play the game, learn the rules. But what I do myself nowadays is, it's quite easy for me, not being part of that system, not using the system as much as I possibly can, that they can't take anything from me. You know what I mean? I've got no ownership to anything. And when they've taken things off me, like Hyde Park, March last year, when there was that huge protest down there, I ended up being one of the last ones to be arrested after the weekend. Now, they took this huge rucksack from me, everything that I had to travel about with at the time. And because I don't want to consent to be part of that system, and I know that by going in there without having a name, you're just going to cause a lot of grief in the station. Yeah, it can be fun, but the thing is, it depends what you want to do with your time. I don't mind educating police. When I get arrested, I go down to a station and I've got a very captive audience, because that's what I do at protests. I don't protest, but I know the police down there that could well do with a bit of deprogramming. And they're told to stand there on half-hour stints or how long it is. And that gives me a full chance to stand there and have a good long chat with them whilst they're stood still.
I guess you think. You've been down the Ecuadorian embassy recently, haven't you?
Yeah, that's we went down there the other day, and it was like I started chatting to him, and then my mate said, right, get the camera, because this is really good information. So we went to go and get the camera, and they were like, well, we don't want to be filmed. And that's the whole thing. Like, when you've got a camera out on them, they act completely different, because they know they're being filmed, and they don't want to be caught saying anything untoward that will ruin their jobs. It's like, recently I caught a woman copper on camera saying some really phenomenal stuff. Like, she said, yeah, I do know that statutes and acts actually require consent, and if you do not give consent, then we cannot enforce it as law upon you. And because she is a great copper, and she's worried about losing her job over that video, I took it down out of respect to her. And other people, to try and discredit me, have been putting videos like that up, and other videos too. Even one that makes it look like I'm picking my nose. But if that's the best people have got trying to discredit me, then, like, the thing is, I do a lot worse than picking my nose, let me tell you that.
It does have to be said that, in my experience, the people who've actually met you in the flesh really like you, and the people who believe what they read about you on the internet are somewhat less certain friends.
Yeah, that's the whole thing. And if people have got an agenda or something, when they do meet me, that's up to them. I'm just human like anyone else. I've met so many great people by doing what I do. And I actually enjoy my life. But of course I'm going to get people coming into my life because of what I do to disrupt and do whatever they need to do within their power to make my life hard. Like, I've had one quite recently who's come out and I'm not going to mention names on here, but I think it'll be pretty obvious at some point. But the thing is, he bought his way into my life by January this year. I put up online, could anybody lend me a laptop for a couple of days? And he replied back, I'll buy you one. Like, he phoned me up and offered to buy me one. And I said, well, no, not if you can't. He goes, no, I really respect what you do. So he's got me a laptop, and then I felt indebted to him. So I've ended up going around his house. And the first time I was round there, and he's got a meal from the Chinese, and we finished it. He's rubbed his hands together and said, well, I can't see another man stabbing another man in the back after I've had a meal with him. And I was just thinking, well, that's a bit of a strange thing to say from someone you hardly know, and what have you got planned then? And from then, all he seemed to do was attack absolutely everyone that I know online, phone people up on Skype when I was around his house to say, look who I've got here. So then he starts tying himself to other people, and then attack everywhere. And he might be right in some circumstances on what he's saying, but he's not coming out with factual information. It's just attack, when I know for a fact, I've seen his medical records, that he's not a well man. So that, this is going back to what the start of the show. There's some people that's out there disrupting information flowing freely, solution, and I don't think they're paid by the government. I just think they're very, very sick.
Well, I mean, there's somebody out there to think absolutely everything, isn't there? I mean, I've been hearing recently people saying that there is that there's no process that works, and that there never will be a process that works. And yet, since I've known you, you've been floating in and out of police stations and courts, and they always seem to let you go again.
Well, that's the whole thing now with myself. I see it as different levels of the game. Like, if you're interacting with the police on a one-to-one level, then, like, it's not gone to that level of them asking you your name and that. When it gets to that level of them asking you your name, you're on another level, so you've got to step up a bit on the authority side of it, where they're claiming to have authority for you to give them a name. I require you to give me this name. I request you to give me this name. All I simply say is, do you have any proof that I have such a thing to give you? And when they say, of course you've got a name, don't be stupid, which they say most of the time.
I saw that one the other day. Of course you've got a name, don't be foolish.
Yeah, and it's at the end of the day, you're asking me to give you something, so you're making a claim. Do you have any proof that this claim has any anything? What, do I have a name to give you? What is this name? And they say the name on the birth certificate. I'll tell you what it does say on the birth certificate, if you want me to be honest with you. It will say, not to be used as identification, Crown copyright. And if it's Crown copyright, how can I be liable for something that the Crown claimed to own? And then, like, if I do get arrested and this goes down to the police station, the funny thing is with myself, like, that video which we was just talking about, I've got arrested, got taken down to the station. When other police turned up and there's backup there, and the guys grabbed me to the floor, we're rolling about on the floor, and I've said to the other two coppers, I've said, look, I'm a peaceful man, I've not done anything wrong. They've said, okay, it'll just be us two, we'll take you to the van. And then when we got to the station, they said, what's your name then? I said, well, that's what seems to be the problem. I don't think that I have to give this man any information because I've done nothing wrong. And does he have any proof that I have such a thing to give him? And they're thinking, right, you're a little bit nuts, so we're taking you in. The ginger copper as well, he's going, right, his name's Dominic Lohan, before we've actually got to the custody area. So we've got to the custody area, and he says, right, Sarge, I believe his name to be Dominic Lohan. They've typed that in, and as we know from the past, they've taken my fingerprints three separate occasions, and my fingerprints come back as name unknown. So when they typed the name in front of me, and he actually turned around and said, well, that's strange, nothing's come up. And then another cop has come from around the corner with a long piece of paper in his hand, and he's giving it to him, and they're typing this in. But they're threatening me with mental health, bringing a doctor in, threatening me with court the next day. And because I've got nothing to lose, and I've got nothing to worry about, they sent someone down from medical team. I'm not going to sit there and talk about shape-shifting reptilians and daft things that will get you sectioned. I might be talking about certain things that may be able to help within the health industry, where they swear an oath, a Hippocratic oath, to do no one any harm, and then explain to them about the birth certificate and what that is, basically making somebody a slave. And when they're in the National Health, midwives, they even swear the same Hippocratic oath. So they swear to do no harm. Anyway, we're going off subject anyway on that. But if I'm in the police station, it's with myself, I've got no fingerprints anymore in the system. So they can't get joinder from me because I'm not signing anything in any box. They've got no consent for a name for me. And it would be too much hassle to take me to court for something like failing to give your name when they've got nothing that they can take off me. And if they put me in prison, like they did last time they put me in prison was a year and a half ago, and they kicked me out 10 days early. So the thing is, what can they do with somebody like me? They cannot do me any harm. The biggest punishment they've got is 3 meals a day and a bed and a very captive audience.
Yeah, have you met anybody else whose fingerprints have gone missing?
No. No.
didn't they at one stage let you go to appear in a court having not managed to get the name of your straw party?
Right, yeah. There's such a thing as a non-recordable offence. And when it's a non-recordable offence, in this case, it was allegedly starting fires or pitching up a tent in under the open parks, open spaces, or no, the Royal Parks and Open Spaces regulations, and this was in Hyde Park. And because it was a non-recordable offence, they didn't take my prints. And then they didn't get joined to a name or anything like that, and they put me in front of a virtual court, which is a TV screen, basically in a cell down the police station, wired up to the courthouse. So they've turned the screen on, I'm sitting there, and they've said, right, what is your name? And I said, well, I'm here as a friend of the court. I believe there's been a mistake. I wish to seek remedy in the way of a proper notice. And what that means, a friend of the court is a legal process where it's amunus curiae in Latin, which means you're there to just present the facts to the courtroom. What an amunus curiae is someone not party to the case who volunteers to offer information to assist in a court deciding a matter before it. So you're not the person and you're not party to the case, but you're there to present the facts to them. Mm-hmm. And you believe there's been a mistake. And all these court cases, they are based upon fiction. They are based upon deception. And you deceive yourself by your own naivety to their game, their rules. So every case has its own merits, and you could quite easily tear any case apart by he who makes a claim is liable. So if you're going in there making loads of claims, like I'm a free man on the land, you're making a claim. Can you prove this? Or if you say I'm master, can you prove you're a master? Oh, it's my constitutional title. Well, I'll tell you what, when they tell you 3 times to sit down and call you mister, and you put your ass on that seat, then like you're under their jurisdiction anyway. If you don't know how to play their rules, don't make up your own. That's how easy it is for them to get jurisdiction over you, is by people going in there making claims. So what I tend to do is leave the claims down to them, and they've made so many claims that are based upon fiction that you can tear them apart. But what I tend to do early on in a court case will be say, could I have the full legal bundle? And the full legal bundle, you will be able to basically get from the court, and they'll probably give you a huge body of paperwork, and you'll say, well, I don't even know if I've got the full legal bundle in front of me, let alone the time to go through this today, so shall we adjourn it? And I'll guarantee you you'll get adjourned, and then you come back like 4 weeks later and find out under the court procedures what's missing within your full legal bundle, and then they'll have to give it to you again and adjourn it again. It's going to cost them a lot of time and money. I wouldn't actually bother playing with them until like I was ready to, And then at the point of my last case, where I stood there, this was for from down the Occupy movement, when I got strangled. I got arrested for the pleasure of being strangled by an ex-copper. And that pleasure actually took me into the cells and kept me away for 2 days from the Occupy movement. I actually went to prison for a day. And then when I was in court, I got released, bail addressed. That's all another long story. But the final part of the court case was, I've gone in there and I said, well, I do need the full legal bundle before we can proceed. And they said, well, what is your name? And I said, well, I'm here as an amulus curiae, a friend of the court. And we need the full legal bundle because the evidence is in there, whether I am a name or not. And each time they couldn't present me with the full legal bundle. And the last time the judge was shouting and screaming at me, saying contempt of court, all the above stuff which they do threaten you with, until like he's realised he couldn't get consent, he couldn't get joinder with me. And he's just said to the prosecution, could you stand up and talk? Prosecution stood up and said, we have no evidence in this case. And even though they found a bag of cannabis on me, they had no evidence. So that means by not being able to get joinder, they've got no evidence that you are a person, because you are not a person. You are a man or a woman or whatever. But like, I've not even needed to make these sort of claims. If they're making claims, they need to prove their claims. You can tear them apart by that.
And it does go to show, doesn't it, that it is a man that approaches you, and it's that it's your attitude and your approach that turns him into an officer.
What do you mean by that?
Well, you know, the man is a man, a flesh and blood being that's approaching you to talk to you, and it's you that gives him authority by recognising in some way as uniform or that claimed authority.
Yeah, yeah, and it, even like if you don't assume them to have authority, because truly the police don't have any authority, but they might think by throwing handcuffs in you and putting you in a cell, that's having some kind of authority, but it's not at all. You've still got more of the game to play. You've got to go to court, and if anyone, the people sitting in the chair that make the directions after the clerk has told them what the legal standings are, it's up to them at the end of the day. They're the only ones in any case. I see it as a computer game. It's, you've got all these different levels before you get to the final level, and that's your whole life. It's one big game where you may as well enjoy it, because if not, you're going to get sucked into negativity, and that will just all come back round on you. Like, as I've said many times, energy goes where energy flows.
Yeah. We'll return perhaps in a minute to the subject of processes that work and ones that don't, because it is what I'd like to sort of concentrate on. But a question's just come up in the chat box, and it is something I was going to get onto anyway. I was going to ask you how you were getting on moving around the place without any gaming tokens, because it is a question I get asked about you quite a lot. But in the chat box it says, I've got a question I'd like to hear asked of Dom. How many more people does he know who he can freeload off so he doesn't need money? And what are his plans when he runs out of gullible people to sponge off? Off you go, Dom.
Well, the thing is, I don't see it as that. So if other people see it as that, then like, it's pretty obvious that they're there to just try and disrupt, because I've gone around the country helping people, trying to help people with court processes. Like, I was up in Luton the other week, and the guy who I was helping out with the court process, he was showing me all this paperwork, affidavits, notices and all the rest of it. And I said, well, why do you think that will work? And he said, well, I've seen Dave Murphy's videos of like being pulled over in his deregistered car and everything. It's like, well, where's his car now? Has he been to prison using these processes? Are you sure you want to do that without actually looking into it? So by helping this guy out, and he actually really thanked me, because he was going to copy it down to the nail, and it was for two very minor car offences, which he can deal with in a number of ways, which is not going to get him in a lot of trouble. And the guy tried to give me £20 to walk away with, but like, basically I got all the way down to London without using it and put it on my friend's table, and they bought a bottle of brandy and we all drank that. It's quite that simple. if people give me money, I don't mind pushing that money on to somebody else. But I believe if I don't want to use money, if I'm not entering that system, then that's one more person, and sorry for that Freudian slip of using the word person. It's like three-man word rape. I can't stand it. But if I do not want to use money, then like, because every time you use money, it creates more debt. It is a tool of slavery. I think there are better things to use than money, like people. Why can't we actually acknowledge that everyone has value? Therefore, that use the knowledge. People have got skills. That is valuable. People can teach each other skills. When I left Bada Bing's house, who was a big energy suck, I ended up going around somebody else's house, teaching them four different tinctures, how to make white willow bark, feverfew, lavender, and there was another one, can't remember off the top of my head. Taught them how to make them. We had a great crack for a couple of days, and off I went. So if I've been given a couple of meals by people, and the odd thing here and there, I appreciate it so much, but I'm still alive after 37 years. I don't need anybody to throw out any kind of disinfo and slagging me off, because like, they've got a gripe with me. That's up to them, and that's their energy, and they can get on with their own delusional life.
Yeah, I must admit that the last sort of 9 or 10 months have given me a fair amount of experience of that as well, because loads of the things I do now don't yield any gaming tokens, whereas all of the things I used to do yield gaming tokens. And so as a result, I too have been moving through other people's living spaces, and I've found people
must appreciate what you do, Nick, because you're another one that's just shines so brilliantly at what you do, and people will support you through that. But there will be people that will come into your life and try and disrupt that. The thing is, this guy that I just mentioned, which quite a few of us met at Eternal Knowledge Festival, it felt like I was babysitting him from the moment we got there. Mm-hmm. I said to him and his friend, well, the deal is, and it is by consent, you're going there, there's a festival, there's a gathering or whatever, to do a few shifts. And I felt like I was babysitting him, because the first thing we done when we got there was, well, I'm not doing anything, I don't have to. So it felt like I had to sit in the van with him, keeping him away from people, because every time he came out, he just started arguments with people. And I was starting to get sick of him then, but felt like I was in this bubble where he wasn't attacking me, he was just attacking everyone around me. But eventually, even I can't take that to a certain level. And the things that I found out about this guy was he got some post through the door, and there's me jokingly away saying, oh, is this your letter? Because it said Mr. Brian Allen Davis on it. And the thing is, I do jokes about names, and he said, yeah. And I said, then you're this titled him. And he's opened it up, and it's actually his medical report saying he's delusional, and it may lead to psychotic episodes. And that's pretty evident in the way he attacks loads of people online. He does that in real life as well. He doesn't have many friends around him, because even they pull faces, like when he's like shouting and abusing people in his house. And I just had to get away from that. And when I did, it wasn't a moment sooner. And I'm happy, because I can get on trying to help other people. But every now and again, I get sucked into an argument, which is something that I don't mind getting sucked into an argument, but like, it is a big energy suck. It really is.
Yeah, I think you put your finger on it when you say that people kind of like appreciate having you around, and that is a matter of working in the other direction from the character you've just been talking about. It is this, and it tends to be, I find, not just a matter of exercising your own skills willy nilly or what have you. So much of it is a matter of
sharing,
trying to share the vibe of the place that you're in, and it, you know, it's something I noticed that you do, and I'm doing it as well. It just seems to come fairly naturally that time in a place is spent watching how this particular bunch of people do things, and seeing how best you can oil the wheels in that particular I don't know, family group or whatever it is, and that even then, there's still some people who feel kind of obliged to have you there. But I, in my experience, they're massively in the minority, and most people are really enthusiastic about it, really. I thought I'd feel like I was scrounging off people, but I do feel, just like you seem to, that there's some kind of fair trade going on here, and that it leads to a change in your mind. It leads to a change in the way you treat people, or at least that's what's happened to me.
Well, I've been involved in a lot of things over the past few years, from communities that have already been established, getting involved with newly formed communities, and even starting my own, and learning a lot from all of these experiences, and visiting big squatting communities. Like down in Bristol, it's very live and active down there for the so-called squatting community, and that's another thing. Calling squatting criminalised if you're going into a residential property. Now, these are all, once again, claims that the government will make upon you in a courtroom, and there's very easy solutions. All these claims are made upon deceptions and fiction. Tear apart their claims in the courtroom. It's not a criminal act. And a squatter is somebody who's legally defined as a person who's occupying premises that does not belong to himself or herself. So if you're claiming to be a squatter, who is a person who is legally defined as a corporation, so you've lost already. If you're claiming to occupy premises, you're going to lose again, because occupying is to cause conflict. Occupying premises that does not belong to you, well, you're in that it doesn't belong to you. What are you doing? Why are you making all these claims? The Section 6, which squatters have been told is for their benefit and will do them well, is just another huge deception. It's created by the government to basically label you something so they can deal with you very easily in a courtroom.
And they're basically using words to lure you into cooperating unwittingly, really.
That's it. They use these words in the same way that they cast magic. You spell words and you're casting a spell.
Yeah. Yeah. It's at some stage, I'd love to have a slightly extended chat on the subject of the communities that you've been in and how different ones of them work, but it's not really the subject for tonight's show. We'll do it again at some point. But on that subject, I don't know whether you know that we've decided to throw our shoulder to the wheel at Bodenham Manor for a while.
Oh, cool. Are you there now?
No, not at the moment. We're in our mountain fastness at the moment, but we are in the process of taking up beneficial use of a plot of land there, and we've been there quite a lot over the last 2 or 3 weeks. And there was a question from Kat in the chat box who asked why you left Hereford.
Why I left? Yeah. I got arrested there. I got arrested on a warrant, and basically, the people that were there, who are no longer there, fell out with me. I don't want to go into too much detail about that, but I didn't fall out with the people that were running the place, and I actually think that Guy is one of the guys that puts in a lot of hard work into proper research. I don't know how he's... I've not looked at his stuff, but I know he puts in a lot of time on research on proper remedies and what to do. I don't know if he's managed to get any success or anything like that, because I've not been following all of his work.
He's still very active. I think he's having a cracking time. Hopefully we'll hear from him on the show in the not too distant. Working hard, he is.
Yeah, I don't think I fell out with anyone actually that is there now. The ones that I did fall out with, it was more of like an ego type thing, and I can remember it was when we first got there, the back hall was just full of junk, so we all helped clean all that out, and it was a very tiring job, cleaning it all out. And then one night when everyone's gone to bed, I made the place look really nice and homely inside as well by putting loads of holly out and doilies and just make it look like a bit prettier as such. And people in question come out and they thought I was doing that to show that I was doing more work and trying to make them look like they're not doing enough, and it just started with an ego thing.
I came across that attitude myself in the era you're talking about.
And when they had the vehicle that was on site at the time, and where we weren't using money, they were like saying, well, you can't use our vehicle, we're not going skipping. They were using their gyros. So it just made it a bit harder for us. But then Sanchez come down with his car, and we just loaded up the fridge and the freezer and gave it to everyone in the manor house, as well as like everyone that was like on the land at the time. And Sanchez also brought down his laptop solar panels and said anyone can use it. And they got more jealous because, that was the thing. Yeah, I put up a picture on Facebook and I said exciting project, blah, blah, blah. And it was a picture of the manor house, but it wasn't addressed or anything like that. It was just an old picture. And that seemed to cause some upset between some people because it seemed like many people did want to help out. And I don't know, it's just like when you're forming communities, it's a very strange thing to watch.
Well, we've talked about this about Bodnam specifically and about communities generally quite a lot on the show. And actually, the kind of thing you're describing is highlighted specific because we, as you know, we've been moving through a lot of communities over the last 9 months or so, and actually have been living in communities and out of them one way or the other for many years. And one of the main difference that we've kind of identified at Bodnam is that it's not a purposeful, what's the word? Not purposeful. It's not a intentional community. That what there is a bundle of people who are turning up there, partly because they've got no choice in many cases, or because they know that there's somewhere there where they can go and get a bit of a breather and think about things. And the result of that for us, we've been in and out of there.
Darren Diogi's a resident down there now.
Yeah.
And I know with the likes of yourself and Darren Diogi, that like that place would be buzzing with energy.
It was your comment at the end of the Green Gathering that really changed our mind and Synchro's, and made us think, yeah, okay, well, we'll go and give that an effort. The thing is, though, that, you know, the place changed because of the kind of the stuff you're talking about, because of the fact that what you've got is a whole load of individuals who are experimenting with their own authority. The place tends to be fairly tumultuous on a regular basis, and B, you can go away just for a week. You can literally be away from the place for a week, and by the time you get back, loads of really major things have changed. And to most people, that would maybe be an overwhelming challenge, but I look at it and I think, in a way, that's kind of what I want. You know, what happened yesterday? I've been to sleep since then, you know, and I'd really like to. I'm really, really looking forward to engaging with there's a huge number of people going through the place, you know, now. They maybe get sort of 30, 40, 50 visitors over a week. And one way or the other, just tea and guided tours or, you know, information have to be one way or the other provided to all of those people by whoever it is that happens to be remaining in the place at the time. It's tremendously stimulating, I think.
Yeah. This is a good thing with a community, watching it form. But this is the whole thing, like, from seeing many different stages of communities, it's, I really want to go to TP Village and Tinker's Bubble, because they're two places that have been established for some time. But like what I was hearing at the Green Gathering, there was some guy talking about the Lammas project, and it just seems like some of these communities, when they reach a certain size or established sort of size, that it becomes very corporate, and it's fitting very in line with like Agenda 21 modules, where it's making it look like a sustainable green future for yourself and your family. But what you've got to do is buy a plot of land. Your plot of land will be this sort of size. Before you get it, you've got to prove how much you can make on there. You've got to make this much every month. So it's like, oh my God, it's like, so freedom's becoming more and more offensive. They can see that people can be free from this corporate system, but they're turning it corporate to be free.
Yeah, I think that's exactly the case. I'd say that was one way or the other accidentally the case with most of the places that we visited. But it is, of course, because most people are living or labouring under the illusion of the illusion. And the people that are coming to Bodnam, that is more often than not the case. The people that are turning up there are administratively informed, shall we say.
Yeah.
And I think the result of that is that it's, and the fact that it's changing so quickly makes it extremely difficult to pin down. I mean, all of the ideas that came up last week are kind of new things. And I'm with you. I think there's a possibility now of at least establishing a few groundbreaking events there, even if all of the people who do that then subsequently also move on. But the kind of volatile nature of the place is, in the long run, I think, entirely consistent, A, with the age of change that we're living in, and B, with the aims of the place, which is to try in some sense to find out, to take us back to the original idea for the show, to find out and use the processes that work, whatever they be, either on an individual or a community basis, because as I emphasized earlier in the show, there are two ways of approaching this, and they're both valid.
Well, within that system, the thing is, you've got to look at it like all these pieces of paper, they all claim ownership, claims make you liable. If you're going to play this game of ownership, know what you're gambling with. If you're playing a game of ownership with a deregistered car, or you think it's deregistered, or you're claiming it to be deregistered, then like you're playing with the people that hold these pieces of paper and treat you as a slave. So they could take your car off you and crush it. Very interesting, actually. A cop said to me the other day outside the Assange thing that it's only the license plate they want back. So I'm going to look into that a bit more. I only heard that the other day. And another interesting one that I heard when I was up in Durham the other week, a sergeant said to me, he said, "So what is your name?" And I said to him jokingly, "Well, I think I've lost mine, to be honest with you." He goes, "Oh, you've divested your name." So I've looked up what divest is and divestment, and you're actually standing away from your legal title or your property completely. Now, if you want to be free from that system of control, let's say you could divest from your name, so that means your name would never exist again. Could you actually live without that system of control, without using your name ever again? Without using your date of birth and signature, without using a bank. Can you live like that? They've done a number on people. They've done this for thousands of years, so it's hard for people to break free. Everything is upside down, backwards, and inside out. You look at the education system, it's there to make you follow, not question. That's not educating. You're not learning. You're being told what to know rather than find out for yourself what is right or wrong. You've got a health system that is created just to make money out of people being sick. So the longer you keep people sick, i.e. look at cancer, when we know people could be cured from cancer quite cheaply and quite easily, they would rather people have chemotherapy where the results out of that are not that reliable for success. So you've got a health system that makes a lot of money out of people being sick. You've got a monetary system that every time you use it creates debt. It's like a legal system that keeps you enslaved by a body of words. So they've cast a spell upon people with their legalese. How can people be free from all of this knowledge if they're not prepared to accept that that system is doing them quite well indeed? They don't agree with it. Like, I've stood there randomly asking people on the street, do you think the government should be trusted? And they'll say, no. Do you have any solutions? Once again, another no. So the way I see it at the moment in this awakening, and why you've got loads of people running around like headless chickens, is because so many people do know that the government are corrupt. But what are the solutions? And the people that are finding out the solutions are being told a lot of disinformation. This is how you do that. This is how you do that. And before they know it, they've had their car, their house, and their children taken off them. How much do you want to lose before you realize the only way you can be free from their system is by not using their system?
And that, of course, includes the money, doesn't it? Because that's become my slow realization is, first of all, I mean, I got rid of the bank account a long time ago, and it is difficult surviving. It is difficult sometimes getting along without one. There are many things you can't do as a result. Then I got rid of the stone address. People want your postcode all over the place now, but I have concluded that my experiments at working or to kind of occupying my being busy, you know, kind of doing stuff without taking the promissory tokens is more rewarding, and also you kind of get a bigger understanding of it. We were talking at the, you were probably there at the Freeman Forum at the Green Gathering, about what happens when you say buy a pasty for somebody, and effectively you go and spend your 3 or 4 quid, and the bank gets 40 quid because of fractional reserve banking, and uses it to make homeless whoever it was that you're trying to give the pasty to. So that, yeah, not only are the notes not money, they are actually debt. You know, that somebody's handing you a pile of debt when they hand you a pile of cash, and all you're doing is managing to transfer it. But that whatever it is that we do down here, the banksters who we were talking about earlier with Michael make 10 times as much out of these transactions. So it makes sense in theory because of that, and in practice because of how much more fun it is to try and move away from money, because it is ultimately, it's the hardest thing for us to give up.
What, money?
Yeah.
It is that mindset of doing it and being able to have a network to do it within, because I don't think you could break free from that system and go, right, I'm not going to use money anymore, when you're living in a concrete building where you're tied to the address where a name comes through the door every day. It's near enough impossible. Like, what happened with me was I actually went to go and try and help Kewbridge Eco Village with law information, and that was a community that was using reclaimed stuff and recycled stuff to build stuff on the side of Kewbridge by the river. And I was also staying at my mates on the sofa at the time and trying to work. I was working in construction. And then, like, I just, like, ended up living full-time at Kewbridge. And there's a community of people. And from there, I started, like, networking up and down the country, having other possible land claims, and doing other crazy stuff within protest movements. And I found it quite easy for myself, but for somebody that's got, like, if I was a bloke with a wife and two kids, it would find it a lot harder to be free. I know that for a fact. I know what I do isn't for everyone.
No, I know. I accept that entirely. There was a bit of me who many years ago realised that if I got around to having children, then I would probably be at what approximates to war with the state. I didn't really realise that's kind of the way it's going to end up anyway. But it would be so much more difficult if I wasn't just able to make my own decisions.
Has there been anything in the chat room tonight?
Yeah, they're busy chatting away about money and the rest of it. I've given the questions that have come across. But I've been listening to you rather than actually watching them. I tend to put the odd tune on every now and then so I can have a quick look through the chat boxes. We could do that if you wanted. Just put a quick 2 or 3 minute tune on whilst I have a quick look through to see what's in there, and then get back. We've got 25 minutes.
And that'll give me a chance to ponce a roll up off of someone.
Okay, yeah, you go and do some more scrounging, Dom.
I'm going to enjoy this ponced beer I've got. And enjoy the ponced kind company I've got too. So I'll be
excellent.
Back in 2 minutes.
I'm going to play How Can Anybody Be So Unkind As to Arrest a Man for Driving Whilst Blind. So we're back live with commonly called Dom, who's just noticed something about a barbecue in the chat box. What did you want to say about that, Dom?
Yeah, I just got my mate to sign in, and he saw Kat write about a free barbecue. And she knows a bit of land where they could have a free barbecue. Now, if you'd done something like that and you was honourable and tidied up and all the rest, didn't claim to be a protest, didn't make any claims, the thing is, I've been talking to somebody in Hackney who said they've got a perfect bit of land to set a community up, but they don't know the people and things like that. And they've been looking at it for some time, a good few years. And they tried to do something a few years ago and realised they haven't got the time themselves. I said, well, why not open it up? Like, go in there, build some raised beds and plant some veg, and nobody knows about it. By the time you've got a load of things growing, open it up for the local community around to have it as a free space. And if the council come and shut it down, then there'll be the community around saying, hang on, this is like an unused piece of land which isn't ever going to be used, and now we're using it. So what seems to be the problem? But like, that is directly positive activism, where it's that they're not going to like charge you with having a free barbecue on a piece of land.
As a kind of extension for that, some people I'm hoping to get on the show eventually are the good folk of Todd Morden up in, I think it's up in Yorkshire. Sorry if I've got it in the wrong place, because they've got themselves into a position where they're more or less self-sufficient on their own vegetables now. And the guys I spoke to there said they use pretty much the method as you just described. But what they did was they actually got the council involved on some really small and innocuous looking projects to start with, so that by the time it expanded, the council were kind of fully on board, and it would have been extremely embarrassing for them to get off. So it is a kind of thing which sounds to me like it might be scalable as well.
Well, this is it. It's like when you're looking at global or national, I know I'm not going to change the world. I know I can only change myself. But when I change, the whole world around me changes. And that starts from within. When I look at like little things around me, if I'm doing positive things, then it's positivity that's going on around me. But if I get sucked into that negativity, then it's nothing but negativity that comes back at me. So I know I do right and wrong. So learn from the things that you do wrong and try and do right from it.
I think that's really important, isn't it, is to realise that a lot of the stuff you're seeing coming back at you was projected by you in the first place. I was struck by that with the policeman. I posted the link into the chat box, where he was constantly accusing you of demeaning him and ended up calling you both foolish and a fool.
Well, that's it. It's the thing is, when it's the camera in that circumstance, I do believe when I'm holding a fold-out camera, it's like holding a police taser at them. They look shocked, and they deal with it in a completely different manner. When I'm talking to them on a level without any camera at all, because I've not got a spy camera anymore, when I'm talking to them on a level, it's a completely different experience. It's like you wouldn't believe half the things that they say and where they're coming from. They're stuck in a rut. These people too. These are truly your brothers and sisters. They feel like they've got into the job and they're doing what they feel is a good thing. But this is what's programmed into them. They're feeling that they're doing it. They're not knowing doing right or wrong. They're just following the procedure that they've been taught to do. And if the procedure is not done correctly, it's not given the force of law. But the thing is, they're not taught how it's given the force of law. So that goes on to the courts, and they decide how naive you are to the system. If you want to make claims in there, then you're going to be like under their jurisdiction and served upon exactly the way they want you to. You know what I mean? They make a lot of money out of people putting out this rebellious information. When people like are going into courts and trying to do things honourably, by serving notices of intent and claims of right, affidavits, and saying, right, we don't consent to being part of the system, you're making a lot of claims within this, and at the end of the day, it seems like everyone that's doing this is making themselves liable, and they're losing things which they think they own, when truly they don't.
It's not just the camera that works, is it? Because I know that some of the people who've been talking to Darren of the People's Public Trust have had a similar effect by putting on an observer's badge.
Well, that's the thing. It's the whole perception of what you're dressed in as well. Off grid the other week, I was wearing a black hat with security written on it in white writing and a high vis jacket. the thing is, people would perceive you to be a security guard, like, dressed up like that at a festival. I was just doing it as a joke and seeing if I was getting any interactions. Unfortunately, the security already knew me, so they wouldn't play with me. They've already learnt their lesson. And the owners of the festival, they all knew me and let me play my little game. But it was quite funny when people were having interactions with me, and then I'd tell them eventually, like, I don't work here, or I'm not security. And they're like, of course you are. You've got a security hat on. If I put a security hat on you, does it make you security? And they're like, no, because you've got a high vis. It's like, okay, put the high vis on then. Are you security? And it's like, no. Well, do I look like a security guard now? You do. You must be.
Yeah.
And that's the whole thing. I think people's mindsets, people are programmed to follow information and listen to a lot of hearsay. And that adds to their programming of looking at people that are dressed in a certain way or speak in a certain way or sound like they're knowledgeable when they don't know anything at all. It's like, nobody can speak for me and I can't speak for anybody else.
Anybody can try this, can't they? All you have to do is turn up at a public event in the car park with a fluoro jacket on and start showing people where to go and they will they'll obey you.
And a clipboard, yep.
Clipboards are great, actually. Clipboards are really good. That's another PPT thing as well of the badge. It's really good to have a clipboard to scribble things on.
And a radio.
Yes, that also, we've used those. You know, if you're going to be dropping the odd tree and stuff into a road that the council might want you to close, if you have a couple of people in high-vis jackets with radios, you'll be fine.
Yeah, well, we had a laugh the other week in Luton in the shopping mall. Now Luton is I want to travel around the country at the moment setting up little meetings so people can have these meetings, meet people face-to-face and find out solutions within themselves. I think that's a very strong point of something where a few years ago there was a lot of meetings around the country, but they seem to have dispersed and got smaller or broken up. But I think these meetings are quite important to get to a local meeting or even set them up yourself at a local pub or even around your house. Invite people around to have meetings about truth, solutions, or whatever you want to call it, and you'll find remedies within that. And whilst we was in Luton, we walked into the town centre, and I got my camera out and pretended, didn't even have it on, just pretended to have it on whilst we walked through the shopping centre. Within 5 minutes, security guards come up to us. Oh, you can't film in here. What makes you say that then, mate? Well, it's our policy. Well, that's your policy, not mine. Anyway, like he found out that I wasn't filming. He realised we was having a good crack with him. So we had a joke with him, went outside, had a good chat with him. And, you know what I mean? And within 10, 15 minutes, he was agreeing with, like, everything about the corrupt system is just there to enslave people. And then they've got people like you to enforce it when it doesn't really bother you either way if somebody's filming there or not.
So knowing the rules is one thing, but once again, it really does boil down really, really often to your own approach, doesn't it?
Yep, always. It's you can't blame anyone else. It's always down to yourself. Like I was told a very good Buddhist saying about 12 years ago, that happiness is a state of mind. If you're not happy, change your mind. And I do truly believe that that is the way to go, because nobody makes you happy. You do. It's your mind. You make yourself happy. So therefore, you say, oh, they made me angry, or he made me do this. No, you've done it yourself. You can't blame anyone else. This is something you have to deal with and move on from.
Yeah, indeed. I'd agree with that. And, you know, if you come to the point where you feel that your blood pressure's going up and you're getting excited by something, it's because there is something which between the two of you is worth exploring.
Yeah.
And it can be a creative, but it is when you approach it differently, it becomes a creative, co-creative process rather than a codependent one.
Well, if you're agreeing to something, then you're agreeing to a process as such, but it's always down to your own mindset and what you do. Nobody can make me do things, even though, like, I've been there in situations that I've not got involved in or something like that, and then other people have attacked me for not getting involved. Mm-hmm. And it's like,
yeah,
very strange life that you can have, like, trying to expose these corrupt governments and the sort of people that do get involved in your life.
Yeah, as one of my favourite teachers once said to me, life is happening. Life is not happening to you. It's happening because of you. And you're standing at the center, orchestrating, generating, and choreographing every move.
I saw a good poster on Facebook the other week. You are God. Get over it. And I was like, well, that's the whole thing. You create the universe. You are just a resonance, a frequency, a vibration. And you're just there, resonating, creating everything else around you. So why don't you make your universe a beautiful place and manifest great stuff? And I've got a good friend sitting with me at the moment who says, well, no, well, it doesn't work like that because, like, I can't get this. And I can't. Well, that's what you're manifesting. You're saying, I can't, I won't, I don't. So that's why it doesn't happen. And then the other week, we was walking to Luton train station when I was coming down to London. And I was like, what's that on the floor? It's only a train ticket all the way to London, like all the zones and that. So it's like the universe does provide.
It actually really does. It really does. Once you take your mind, once you take your eyes off the distraction and start looking at what's immediately in front of you and paying attention to it, that is exactly my experience. The universe does provide. And looks like it's going to have to, eh?
Well, that's it. And that's the whole reason why I got into this and dropping the illusionary money is because if the monetary system is orchestrated to collapse, I want to have some skills to walk away from that system if it does collapse and there's a zombie apocalypse. I want to be able to survive in any situation, learning what I can forage all year round. Because, like, if you think about what I do at the moment, from Kew Bridge, I used to go skipping, which is like bin raiding to support communities and things like that. But if the monetary system collapsed, there will be none of that. There'll be all the shops will be raided by really hungry people. People will be doing more than just stealing from each other. They'll be trying to eat each other in the end when it gets so serious. So I wanted to be prepared for any sort of situation.
And of course,
and from a life of being in bedsits and a teenager and having to live off cornflakes for 2 weeks because I've spent all my money on pot and things like that. It's, I know for a fact now I could go out there and I could eat things like sorrel and berries and
nettle tips and seeds.
Yeah, and yeah. Hawthorn. There's stuff that I wouldn't have to eat cornflakes for 2 weeks in the wild. There's
and it's
certain
not,
things
it's,
that I know that I could eat.
Yeah.
Just by sitting in fields, and it won't be great for my appetite, but it will be no bad as cornflakes for 2 weeks. And if you look at what a zombie apocalypse would be like in the event of a collapse, then it would take a few weeks before it starts calming down, and then the powers that be would come in and control again. But that's only in that sort of an event, and that's why I went down this route.
It's not just a matter of being able to forage and having the skills and stuff. It's very much a matter about how you get on with other people.
Yep. For sure. Because, like, if you're going to meet up with people and upset people, then, like, these people are going to come back and attack you. And online is a very powerful tool of hearsay where you get what they call it internet trolls.
Yeah.
And these people are relentless at attacking people wherever they go. And I've got one that's not stopped since Occupy, the guy that strangled me. Even though, like, I've put the evidence out there that this guy strangled me, I'd done nothing wrong. His witnesses weren't even looking, which was even more suspect. And now this guy trolls over, like, common law and lawful rooms. This is an ex-copper that was, like, violently aggressive to loads of people at Occupy, amongst other things. And it's just amazing that, like, these people will go in there and they'll put comments in for days, and then somebody will tell me, like, I'm getting seriously attacked online. And it's like, that's nothing new on me. I've been getting attacked for the past few years doing this. Anyway, I had a look at it, and it happened to be the guy that strangled me. And I was like, well, that's nothing new. But when I put a comment up there, they're like, oh, look, you're bringing all this up again. Hang on a minute. You've been commenting for a few days, so people are listening to what you've got to say. So as soon as I come in and speak my truth, you're attacking me saying I'm bringing it all up again. I have not seen or heard from you in months since I barred you from, like, everything on my social networking, and here you are popping up again. So, like, I'll tell you what, I'm going to ignore you and start posting solutions. But then again, he goes off here and there and, like, that bada bing will set up groups. Like, he set one up called the People's Public Trust, and it's nothing to do with Darren Diogi. And then, like, he's got loads of people reeled in there. He's got another one under an anonymous guise, and he reeled a load of people in there. And now he's doing it under the Common Purpose and Brian Gerrish stuff. It's like, this guy's relentless at attacking people online. And as I said, there are many sick people out there, and he is one of them that needs to deal with his own issues because he's passing them on to many other people.
It just goes to show, doesn't it, really, that that there's no replacement for flesh and blood people meeting heart to heart and eyeball to eyeball and seeing what you're actually dealing with.
And then you do actually get to work people out that way, sitting around a fire with them and getting to know them and what they're like with other people. You start evaluating and realising that, well, I even met somebody the other week off-grid that I used to have some, let's say, serious debates with. I used to be on the idea of where he's saying, using words fight and attacking government. I was like, well, there's no point fighting or attacking them. You're just giving them energy that way. And we used to have like some really intense conversations. And when I met up with him, it was like, a wonderful bloke. I know he's doing it from the heart. He's just very passionate at what he does. And I had some great conversations with him around a fire, and I hope to meet him again because there are many people out there that are very passionate, and I've met so many people doing this.
Mm. Yeah,
and,
me too.
I don't think there are that many people that are coming into these groups and manipulating and putting a lot of disinformation out there. But the people that are putting information out, they've got to be aware that people are looking at this information, so therefore you've got to fully document it. When you're going in there and using a process and going to prison, you should be telling people this. When you're using these processes and your car's getting crushed or whatever, tell people this is happening, because honesty is the best policy. If you're not showing full documented evidence of what you're doing, then you're telling somebody how to do something, but you're not telling them what the outcome is. And I think you should be aware of what you're going against and what they're capable of doing themselves.
Yeah. Well, it's been a real pleasure talking with you, Dom. I can tell the chat boxes have enjoyed it as well. There's been plenty of apropos comments in there as far as I can see, but we're now only 4 minutes away from the fabulous Freeman Jack, so I think we should probably call it a day so that I can play a closing tune or so. Okay. Tar very much for it, as ever, for joining us on TNS. You're always welcome on the Dr. Rock Show, mate.
No worries. I love you to pieces anyway. You know that.
Yeah, well, we'll be meeting up somewhere soon, so I'll stay on the line. I'll have a word with you whilst the last tune's playing, but for everybody else, I'd like to say thanks as ever to TNSradio.com for giving me the space to talk to my friends in front of the world, and to Scottish Sovereigns on the Land and all of my mates there who got me involved in all of this in the first place and continue to encourage and support me faultlessly, I must say.
You got to thank yourself as well.
And thank you to me for remembering to be here. And in the meantime, it looks like we're going to play out with, oh yeah, brilliant, one of our shared friends, Dom. I'm going to play out with Litmus's Happy New Day.
Cool.
Sounds like a really cheesy tune, guys, but the more I found with this one, the more you listen to it, the better it gets. So playing out to Freeman Jack. Thanks a lot to Dom and to Michael of the Albiones, and I'll be back with you all next week. This is
Thank
Litmus.
You again, Nick.
Okay, mate. This is Litmus from Project.
Happy New Day.
Happy New Day. The 99% are here to say Happy New Day. We're gonna take the world back today. Happy New Day. When we were kids, we used to go out to play all day. But as we grew up, loads of other things got in the way. To give it too much to do, forgot about taking time to be. We were led astray, came slaves to the 1%, and we forgot that we were all born free. But now we're starting to see a happy new day. The 99% are here to say Happy New Day. know what I want. Sharing the ship, humanity, an infinite love, connected by a singularity, coming to learn the lesson of unconditional love. But this planet called Earth has been taken by those who live by greed. But we've got 7 billion to feed. Now you know what we need. A happy new day. The 99% are here to stay. Happy new day. We're gonna take the world back today. Happy new day. The 99% are here to stay. Happy new day. We're gonna take the world back today. Happy new day. Happy new day. We ain't gonna pay the banksters' debt, no way. We're gonna stop the usury today. We're here to sell the soldiers, we don't wanna play. We're gonna take your bombs and guns away. And we're here to tell the tax man we ain't gonna pay. You can tax the corporations millions a day. We ain't gonna go to